Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Canadian spies are boring.
A special season of spy stories in celebration of Canada Day 2021. Join us for 10 daily episodes as we explore the world of espionage in Canada. Season starts July 1st.
Welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
Welcome to another thirst-quenching episode of Canadian Politics is Boring. My name is Jesse, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Reese. Hello, Reese. How are you
doing? Hello. I am so hot. I mean, yeah. That is in temperature, not... I'm not bigging myself up in terms of my physical appearance.
Okay, I was going to say, because I'm so hot. Do like to do that. Yeah,
I'm just warm, sweaty hot, unattractively sweaty hot.
I am also unattractively sweaty hot. I just went for like a good two-hour walk in the park, and it was lovely, but now that I'm back inside with no windows, why did I not grow up?
You live in a room with no windows?
I live in a room with no windows, yep. No nice. Openable.
Are you in the defund bunker? Oh, good.
It sucks. I keep looking at the weather report for rain, and it's like, yeah, we're going to have this huge downpour tomorrow, and then, like, but tomorrow comes, and it's nothing. It's just evaporated.
Do you know, nobody told me, I was fully prepared for the cold moving to Canada. Nobody told me about the heat. I had no idea I ever got this hot in Canada. It was a big surprise.
I was in two different places in Canada. So Toronto, they had a heat wave and it was plus 50 degrees Celsius.
You don't need that. It's excessive. Why would they do it? you don't need it to be that hot.
You're right. We should write a strongly worded letter to the Toronto mayor.
Doug Ford.
There you go. And say, please turn down the heat.
The Lord of Ontario, Doug Ford, Lord of Ontario. There's no need for this. Just stop it.
And we don't even have to say the weather. We'll just say that.
Just stop it.
Yeah, just stop. Generally,
well, it's up to him to read between the lines. It's nuanced.
The worst weather was Calgary by far. Calgary is the most fucked up weather I've ever seen in my life.
Was it too hot for you or
too cold? -50. Minus.
See, I can deal with that because
you can deal with -50.
Yeah, because as long as you got the right gear, You can when it's cold, you can just put more layers on. When it's hot, you can't.
Have you ever shed your skin or peel it off with like
a potato peeler?
Say that now, but have you ever been in minus 50 weather?
I've been like close to minus 40, and as long
so
as
like minus 37. Yeah. There's a add another negative 13 degrees to that. I'm telling you, it makes a difference. Trust me.
I think if I didn't have the right gear, then yes, it would be horrible. But if I had like a decent coat and, you know, super warm, chunky,
you can't let any skin touch the air. None. Zero.
That's my rule anyway.
Our eyelids were freezing shut. Spit was freezing and clunking along the ground before it, like, it was nuts.
Why were you spitting? We're just walking around spitting.
That's what I mean.
What are you, like 15?
That's just the culture in Calgary. That's all. That's,
yeah. You're chewing tobacco.
just walk around.
The tobacco froze in your mouths.
So our small talk has dried up to the point where now we just have to talk about the weather. That's it. That's kind of sad.
Yeah, only because I tried my swimming pool up for the first time and...
the swimming pool that you yourself made.
I didn't make it. I got out of a box and assembled it. Which isn't the same as making.
I thought you dug a hole.
No, I didn't dig a hole.
But so I thought you dug a. I swear to God, you were telling me about like, hey, I'm building a pool in the backyard for my kids now. Blah blah blah. Like
from I got it from a store that I probably won't mention, but it rhymes with Schneidian Schmeyer. And I got a pool from there, and it was great because it was cheap, but it's quite big. A man came with a big tanker and he filled up with water. It was great, and except I went in there and I got eaten alive by mosquitoes.
Oh shit.
And one of them stung me inside my belly button. Which has never happened before.
I can't say it's happened to me either, but
my innie is now an outie.
Oh no. Oh no, no, no. Okay, let's move on from that.
Yeah. Do you want to find out what this episode's about?
Sure. Anything to stop thinking about your innie outie belly button. Thank you, Reese, for that image. I can just picture you walking around shirtless, just shoving your finger in your belly button all the time because it's itchy.
You won't go back in. Just holding a cube of ice against it. Anyway, enough about my...
Oh my God, you're innie outie. Yeah.
Enough about my enlarged belly button. Right, so... I got a question for you, Jesse. Do you know what the Northwest Passage is?
I think I've heard of it, actually.
So this episode is all about the Northwest Passage.
Northwest Passage. Isn't that... Let me see if I can get this right. Isn't that...
Are you Googling it? Or are you thinking?
No, I'm thinking. Is the Northwest Passage a set of rivers and canals which ships can take from the Atlantic Ocean all the way to the Great Lakes?
You're close.
Am I close?
Okay. You're close. It's kind of not that, but it is.
Is it not that at all?
It is a passage through the Northwest.
Very funny.
So it is a sea route between the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans through the Arctic Ocean.
So it's about
900 miles from the North Atlantic the North Atlantic of Baffin Island in Canada to the Beaufort Sea north of Alaska.
Do people still take that to this day?
Well, that's the thing, is they couldn't, but now they can. So it's located
entirely. They just don't want to.
It's just located entirely within the Arctic Circle. So it's always been like a really dangerous journey with like huge icebergs that could, like, some were measured up to 300 feet tall. And also giant masses of kind of sea ice that would shift and trap ships in between them for like months. So it was really dangerous.
Cool. Okay.
Now, and when I was researching...
What does this have to do with politics?
Well, we'll get to it.
Okay.
Stop. God. It all tie up nicely in the end in a neat little bow. So what I wanted to say, first of all, was that the Northwest Passage, when you look at the history, it's like, oh, it was discovered by Vikings or whatever, but it wasn't. It was explored by Inuit people, and there are about 65,000 Canadian Inuits in about 53 communities that live all along the edge of the Northwest Passage. So
currently,
yes, there's communities and people who've been living there for a long time, and they were the first people to explore the Arctic. So they did it before everybody else had boats and all the other modern icebreaker ships. They just did it anyway. And they're like, I like it here. And they stayed there. Why? And they're still there now.
Anyone, why people would like it there? I don't get it. I don't like the cold.
Probably not much hassle. That's probably the nice thing about it.
Not a lot of door-to-door salesmen.
No, exactly.
Right, yeah.
So what happened was...
Did I mention on our show about...
About the eyeballs?
No. Yeah, I did too. Okay, yeah.
No, you didn't. I don't remember it. What a funny anecdote.
I don't remember it.
That was interesting.
For those of you listening, you just have to search through our previous episodes to know what that reference was.
It's a good excuse to go back to episode one and work your way through again.
Yes, yeah, seal eyeballs. That's the only. That's it. That's all I'll say.
Okay. Pause now and visit episode 13.
Is it 13? So, I don't think it's 13.
No, I don't know.
You're just making that up. Yeah,
I'm making that up. Yeah. So basically the Inuit communities and like other First Nation groups kind of live in Northern Canada, Northern Greenland and Northern Alaska. And they were kind of like left alone and they had their kind of like cool kind of societies they built there and kind of like living off the, you know, really extreme landscape, really impressive kind of community and culture that developed there.
Having their sea eyeball barbecues for the
community. Exactly.
Yeah.
Good exactly. Stuff.
Yep.
So that all changed because of Europeans. So what happened was the Ottoman Empire, which
was
famous for inventing chairs.
You were waiting on that joke, weren't you?
I wasn't. No, this is part of my head. So the Ottoman Empire was kind of ended just after World War One, and it was. I'm just Googled it now. So in the 14th century. So it was founded in the just at the end of the 13th century. And it was kind of, it covered a lot of the Middle East and North Africa, the Middle East, and the Mediterranean, like around Greece. So it was a large empire that dissolved in 1922.
Okay.
So, but obviously, they had blocked all of the major overland routes between Europe and Asia in the 15th century. So
they blocked them. What do you mean they blocked them?
Well, they controlled the land. So they were stopping European powers from trading across Asia.
Oh, wow.
So European powers, that's when they started to kind of send ships around and trade because they were essentially having to start to look other places because the traditional routes of how they traded were being cut off. So one of the routes they thought they'd explore was whether there was a passage through the northern waters above Canada. And obviously, they had no scientific knowledge or really good maps, or they didn't even have GPS or anything like that. That wasn't, I don't know if you knew that.
This was the Ottoman Empire looking for other routes.
No, this was the European powers.
Looking for other routes because the Ottoman Empire had
blocked them
from.
No, you're not going this way. So,
is that what they said?
Yeah.
They just stood on top of their ship and yelled.
Yeah, go away.
No, you're not going this way?
Okay. Just sternly just said go away. But like their understanding of the ice-cold waters were a bit off. Apparently, most people believed that seawater was incapable of freezing. And you know, I never saw seawater frozen until I moved to Canada.
Really? Yeah. Never seen an iceberg?
No. Why would it? They don't get icebergs in Wales.
I suppose, yeah. We don't want to get icebergs in Nova Scotia either, so I had to move to Newfoundland to see them.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
Anyway, unless you're a large ocean liner in the beginning of the 20th century,
one of my first experiences with icebergs was I lived in Bonavista, Newfoundland, when I was a teenager, and polar bears would get stuck on ice drifts, little icebergs, and they'd you know, flow in the current and they'd just be stuck there in the middle of the ocean until the current kind of pulled them into the shore of Bonavista Bay. And this didn't happen a lot, maybe once or twice a year, which I guess is a lot. And then the polar bear would just kind of hop off the iceberg and start wandering the lands looking for food. And you'd be driving to work or driving to school or whatever on the radio. There'd be the top 10 and 10. And the DJ would be like, all right, that was Alanis Morissette with Ironic. Just let you guys know there's a polar bear on the loose and the SPCA is coming to pick it up. Keep your pets inside, your children inside as well. All right, coming up next to the top 10 and 10.
The world's largest land predator mammal or whatever it is.
Yeah, seriously, just wandering the streets into like just the DJ online is letting you guys know, just keep your kids and pets inside. And like
it's like a traffic thing. There's like a...
Yeah, no, really. I I'm like, we heard
the 101
this
is blocked for 15 miles, and there's a polar bear walking up the main street.
So yes, this happened.
That's amazing. What a place to live. That's incredible.
So that was my experience with icebergs. I didn't, when I was young, we heard that. I was living in, like, with my mother and brother, and we got so excited. We're like, oh my God, let's go find a polar bear. And we hopped in the car and we drove all around the town of Bonavista trying to find this polar bear, and we couldn't find it anywhere. And we're like, where is everybody? There's nobody out and about, right? We were so stunned. We didn't realize, like, this is a big deal. Get in your houses and wait for the polar bear to be taken care of. Do not go and look for it with your family. This is just not something. So anyway, we were fortunate we didn't come across the polar bear.
It sounds like a wonderful but tragic children's book.
Depending on the ending. Yeah.
Jesse and the bear or something. Yeah. Anyway. So the explorers that were sent to look for that Northwest Passage with no experience of sea ice and navigating that water, no maps, they sent lots of exploration kind of parties for several centuries with not much returns and also tragic endings where they were never seen again. One of them in particular. And then this was interesting because it kind of talks a bit about how the European, like, kind of people at the time, the explorers and the settlers, how little regard they had for the people who were there. So there was an expedition led by Sir John Franklin in 1845.
Sir John Franklin?
Sir John Franklin. And he was an Arctic veteran. And he was in command of two ships, the HMS Terror and Erebus.
Isn't there a television show called The Terror that's about that ship?
I haven't seen it, but there might be. Watch it. It's good. It won't be as good as this podcast. So.
Right. No, of course. Sorry. Yeah.
And they were kind of last seen in Baffin Bay, and then both ships disappeared and were never seen again. The Admiralty offered a reward of £20,000, which today is just over £2 million, which is, you know, $3.5 million Canadian dollars.
Yeah, about that.
And to any party or parties of any country who shall render assistance to the crews of the Discovery ships under the command of Sir John Franklin. And what happened was a Hudson Bay fur trader named John Ray was in the area, and he was talking to some Inuk men and started asking them about expedition ships, if they'd seen any.
Did you say Inuk men, or is that...
Yeah, Inuit men. Yeah, so they actually had accounts of that, what happened, and so because they have an oral tradition that a lot of the stories had been passed down of what had happened,
right,
10 years before, and had reached a few people. So the Inuit told this fur trapper 10 years later that they'd met starving men, and they gave him some relics of things that they'd traded with those people to back the story up. And they even said basically they'd found people frozen, and some of them frozen to death in the act of cooking their friends, like an act of cannibalism.
Ew! Oh my God.
So
you really like these dark fucking stories, don't you? Jesus. Yeah, listen to you giggle. You're just having a ball.
I'm laughing
at
your reaction, not the act of eating another human.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Jesse, do you know what time it is?
What time is it, Reese?
Ad time.
Yay. No, that's
back after these important things.
Ads.
So he went back to London to tell them, and he was subjected to a smear campaign initiated by Lady Jane Franklin. And he was basically scandalized and was taken down by the press of the day. And this is according to Ray's biography.
Who was this again?
This was a fur trader called John Ray. And Ken McCougan, his biographer, basically talked about the fact that he went there going, hey, of course, I know what happened to them. And then because there were stories of cannibalism and that they died,
right, of course,
in that way, they were like, no, this is a lie.
You might, honestly, if you were doing it for the money and maybe leave the cannibalism out of the story, just like, you know, oh, we found them, you know.
Exactly.
Looks like a polar bear ate them over a fire with a barbecue. Yep, that's what happened. Yeah, so I could see that. That's just
smart is a hard truth. Yeah. It's a hard, it's a hard bone truth to swallow.
Oh!
Anyway, they actually found the ships in 2014 and 2016.
They found them when?
2014 and 2016, because the Inuit stories have been marginalized for so long that nobody took it. Even though, like, where are these ships? No one knows where they are.
That's amazing. Yeah.
But the Inuit people from that area had been saying for years, we know where the ships are. Yeah, whatever. Nobody knows where the ships are. So they did find them. So archaeologists and a local historian called Louis Kamukak, who was an expert.
The poor Inuit man who've just honest to God, they're just trying to, for like, what, a century? They're trying to tell people to like how's...
the boats are over there. You know where they are.
And
it was actually located near a Inuit community.
Sorry, my timer went off. That means my spinach puffs are done, Reese.
Nice.
Yeah, spinach puffs. Oh, buddy. Well, I'm very excited with this. My oven mitts on, my floral oven mitts.
Yeah. You're just having a snapshot of the domestic life of Jesse Harley.
Okay.
Floral oven mitts and spinach pops fresh out of the oven.
There we go. I'm back, baby.
There we go.
Oh, those spinach puffs look good.
Well, shall I, Karen, tell you the story? What do you eat and smell them?
Yep. Yes, please.
So the sunken wrecks were actually located near an Inuit community called Gajahaven. Sorry. And the funny thing is,
I don't know with you anymore.
The funny thing is, so this, it took like over 150 years for them to find the site, but in the meantime, within that 150 years, they sent expeditions that constantly got stuck and had to be rescued. So they sent rescue expeditions to find them, who then had to get rescued. So the McClure expedition that kind of actually made it across the Northwest Passage. But what happened was they gave up their ships and they did the rest on sleds. They didn't actually do it properly because they got stuck. But they spent 3 years locked in ice on HMS Investigator, which was the name of the ship they sent to investigate.
You're saying people survived for 3 years on a ship?
Yeah, they had supplies and everything.
For 3 years?
Yeah. 3 years of supplies. It's great. You don't have 3 years of supplies? You haven't got 3 years
No,
they did.
They got stuck in the ice, and they survived there for 3 years.
Well, what they would do is...
You just kind of glossed over that part, man. That's huge.
What they'd do is they'd wait for the ice to melt in the summer. And if it didn't melt last summer, they'd have to wait till the next summer. I mean, think how many Marvel films were released while they were stuck in the ice. So they abandoned the ship and made the escape across the ice. And then they were rescued by HMS Resolute, which later itself was also lost to ice. So it took him 4 years to get home, and he was knighted and rewarded for completing the passage on foot. And then 50 years later, in 1906, the first time ever, after all these 100 years of trying, Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen was the first person to do it. He had a crew on a small fishing ship called Gujar, and he reached Alaska's Pacific coast in 1906. Oh, wow. It took him 3 years.
Oh my God.
As well. Can you not talk your mouth full of disgust?
I really could.
Oh, God. I'd rather just stay silent. It's better than that. But so that's like the kind of the early Northwest Passage story. But this is where we're going to start getting the politics starts to come in, because
all right.
Have you heard of a thing called climate change?
I'm aware of it, yes.
Yeah, is where the climate changes.
Although not everyone agrees with that, which is so ridiculous.
Yeah,
not we won't get agrees. Into that though. That's
yeah, but I mean, historically, the climate has always changed. But you know, like dinosaurs, we've all seen Jurassic Park. They lived on a tropical island.
Yeah, you know, all of them.
The end. The end.
That's why you're very good at movie pitches.
Thank you.
Just saying.
They live on a tropical island. There's frogs that somehow become dinosaurs, and they don't really explain it, but it's fine. So in the summer of 2007, the route was entirely ice-free for the first time in recorded history.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And in 2010, two grey whales who were native to the Pacific Ocean were spotted in the Atlantic Ocean for the first time in 200 years. They'd swum across. And in 2012, a record 30 ships crossed over the Northwest Passage, including a luxury cruise ship called Crystal Serenity.
And this is all because of global warming. Like, there's enough ice.
Because of global warming, yeah. They didn't just do it better than the, you know, imagine if the cruise ship got stuck in the ice. They'd have to eat the buffet every day for 3 years.
Oh, my God. That sounds great, actually.
Just carved I'd be all right with melon that. Statues and stuff. But to go on the Crystal Serenity, tickets are somewhere between $20,000 and $150,000, and it takes you a month.
Could you picture that? That'd be a story. $150,000 a ticket?
Yeah, for it's a month-long trip.
Just to freeze your ass off. No, thank you. No.
Yeah. What?
I'd make a show. They'd make a fun show where, like,
what?
Oh, the
Crystal Cruises.
The Crystal Cruises say, like, I don't know, we couldn't do it today because GPS and satellite phones and stuff like that, but it'd be fun.
Yeah, they'd rescue them.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
Yeah, so entitled people who can afford $150,000 cruise line tickets and take a month off work get stuck for 3 years in ice.
I mean, if they could make that work, that'd be fun to watch. Just saying.
But this is where the politics is coming in now, though, Jesse.
Oh, we bashed into an iceberg and our satellite phone and GPS and every single communication device on board is suddenly destroyed and they don't know where we are because we didn't tell them where we were going.
I got a better idea. What if there's a solar flare that wipes out all the communication satellites? And they're in the Northwest Passage and they lose all navigation. That's a way better story. It's so easy to write scripts. I don't want to struggle. That's why I don't bother writing.
Right. That's too easy for you. Yeah.
It's just too easy. Give me a real challenge. Anyway. It's getting political now because now that water is opening up, and that's a very valuable, you know, if you do things like the Panama Canal and the Suez Canal,
yeah,
they're like really important trade routes.
Well, a lot of this is, yeah, all right, so I see where you're going with this, yeah.
So Ottawa considers the Northwest Passage to be Canada's internal waters, and that doesn't mean piss, it just means that it's within their borders. But the United States has got a different approach, is saying that it counts as an international strait. So it's an area of high seas that connects two bodies of water,
which is open
for peaceful use by vessel from any state. And they actually, I mean, like, they had icebreakers to break through, kind of modern, you know, modern ships can pass through it. So in 1969, they sent the SS Manhattan, a U.S. oil tanker, with a U.S. Coast Guard icebreaker, and they had a single barrel of oil on there. Just to prove a point, just to go, look, we can send oil tankers through the Northwest Passage. And it was just to say, yep, we can do what we want. Up yours, Canada. And then they negotiated an agreement on Arctic cooperation. And they kind of agreed to disagree. They signed an agreement saying they disagreed.
No one disagreed that all of that land was Canadian before it opened up and became more accessible, and now suddenly it's not Canadian anymore, is what they're saying?
Yeah, no, when nobody wanted it, when it wasn't useful to them, whenever we went there to die, apart from the people who kind of learned to live there off kind of the landscape, they weren't interested, but now that it was actually a highly profitable trade route potentially, then they're all over it.
Right, of course. Yeah, that makes sense.
And Denmark has laid down his own marker as well.
Oh, Denmark.
Yeah, because of Greenland. Those Danes.
Those freaking Danish. We have, like, I think we've got one, maybe two Danish listeners. Hi. Hello, by the way.
Hi.
Our Danish listeners. Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Nice to meet you. Stay away from the Northwest Passage.
Yeah, it's ours.
Yeah. And do you know a cool twist of fate here? Russia supports Canada's position on the Northwest Passage. So it considers, because it wants similar control over their version of the Northwest Passage on the other side. So they go, yeah, I'm with Canada on this because we want, this is like a mirror image of what we want. So, and the North Sea route that Canada and that Russia had roughly 29 million tons of shipments passed through 2019, and a 40% increase of, again, a 14% increase on the year before in 2018. And Vladimir Putin has set a target of 80 million tons of goods a year by 2024. And he tends to get what he wants.
He does, yeah.
nobody will imagine working for him.
No, thank you. I'm good.
Like, now, smash your own hand to pieces with this hammer. Yes, Vladimir.
Jesus.
Anyway.
Jesus. Where's your imagination take you, man? Like, what?
I don't know. It used to be like with the KGB. God knows.
I just deal with the shoes. Why is he telling me?
I just clean the car. That's my job. That's my car cleaning hand, Vladimir. So the Canadian government, Jesse, you live on the Halifax Peninsula most of the time.
Most of the time.
And I drive across this road all the time and I see them being constructed in the shipyards. But I don't imagine you've seen them, even though you live there, you walk around with your eyes closed and blind to your surroundings in the world.
Happily so.
Mm-hmm. But have you seen the icebreakers they're building, the icebreaking warships for the Canadian Navy in the shipyards in Halifax?
No.
Okay, well, they've been building these massive icebreaking warships right in the city where we live.
And these are
So these are Harry DeWolf class offshore patrol vessels that are being built for the Royal Canadian Navy by the government. And the idea is that they can patrol the Arctic, warships that can break through the ice.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So Canada's getting so serious about it, it's spending $3.5 billion to construct. They're going to build, I think there's six to eight icebreaking warships.
Oh, that's the contract that we had a number of years ago. Oh, okay, yeah, right. That's,
you know, the contract that is kind of like with billions and has transformed the economy of the city and
gave us all these goddamn condos. Yeah, yeah.
I don't think they built condos with the ships.
I'm just mad about the condos. any chance I get to talk about it, I'll
that's just a correlation isn't cause. So I think they just happened at the same
time. Sure.
So yeah, the idea is that their main purpose is to patrol the icy waters of Canada that are otherwise inaccessible.
So what are our plan here is to like rent passageway to people and like, this is ours, we can do this.
Just to be able to send warships up that can...
because if we patrol it often enough, we can kind of claim it as ours.
Yeah, exactly. Right? No one's going to mess, because not many people have icebreaker warships.
Right.
A lot of the icebreakers are research vessels most of the
time. Why would we spend billions of dollars to prevent people from just kind of taking those routes? Like, why would that affect us? Unless we could make money from it somehow.
But also, there's oil, there's gas, there's lots of stuff up there that people want.
All right, all right.
And you know, I think by having no presence up there, it's like wide open for someone else to go and go, well, we're just going to park up here and start extracting some oil or whatever.
Building some condos with some Starbucks at the bottom. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. As the ice melts and it becomes more politically important, it's like another Panama Canal, essentially, but above Canada. And what that means for the people who live there and what that means for Canada and its friendships and neighbors is yet to be decided. So there you go.
Neat. And it was political. How about that? See, look at you did it.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm looking better at that. This is a show about politics. It's always been a show about politics. Uh-huh. Why would it not be?
We gotta think of a better, more original, unique calls to action.
Go to Instagram.
Then go to Instagram.
All right.
If you haven't filled out our survey.
Oh, yeah, do the survey. We had some really nice comments on the survey.
Comments on the survey, for sure. Oh, and brief mentioning. We did a contest a while back for people to leave really nice, funny comments, and we picked some winners and sent out t-shirts. Those are still happening, by the way.
You won't believe this. I picked up the t-shirts today.
Oh, you did? Oh, what a coincidence. All right, cool.
Yeah. I did actually pick them up today. I was handwriting some nice letters, and I'm going to ship them out.
Really? Your handwriting?
Yeah, but just so you know, my handwriting is terrible. So if you can't read it, then
it's your fault.
So go to Instagram And if you're one of the people who left a review and then responded and we set you up saying we're going to send you a t-shirt, then just sit by the door and wait.
Yeah, patiently. Any second now. And if you
don't
want...
Eat,
if you
don't drink, don't blink, just wait.
And also, if you're in the mood to do a neat little survey that'll help us out, go to our website, CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, and there's a little button there that'll send you to the survey.
Great. Well, I'm going to go and do all those
things wonderful I said things. I was going to do. I'm going to do all the things I said I was going to do. So
wonderful.
There you go. Well,
bye.
Goodbye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, dear listener, do you enjoy listening to us ramble incoherently about Canadian politics and history? Boy, do we have a special fucking treat for you. We've got our first ever official live show at a bar.
It's at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street in Halifax on Sunday, May the 26th at 8 p.m. And if you go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, if you look at the banner at the top, it will take you to the tickets so that you can book a ticket and come and spend some quality time. It is going to be a very intimate affair. There are like only about 50 tickets available.
It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to drink a lot. We're going to quiz. Reese is going to quiz me at the end, but he's also going to quiz the audience and see if they know more than I do. And any alcohol you buy, Reese and I, we promise to drink it, no matter how much it is. If you want to hold our hair while we barf in the plants outside of the bar, we'll do that for you.
So go to CanadianPoliticsIsBoring.com, click the banner at the top, and on Sunday, May the 26th at Two Crows Brewing on Brunswick Street, we will see you there.